Hello, this is the Avascent Podcast, a periodic series that we've been recording for a while now. This is Doug Berenson. I'm a managing director here at Avascent. I'm joined by Matt Vallone, the Avascent Analytics Director of Research and Analysis. And we're going to talk for a few minutes today about various budget-related matters, particularly as it pertains to the upcoming election. Now, we're sitting here on the 4th of October, so the election is a little bit more than a month away. And I guess I'll just sort of start by talking about where we are in 2017, I guess. We're in a new fiscal year. A few days into a new fiscal year, and we're, surprise, surprise, operating under a continuing resolution, which I think everybody thought was going to happen and finally came to pass. That continuing resolution, Matt, remind me, runs through December 9th. So, following the election, there will be about 31 days for the Congress to decide what it's going to do about fiscal year 2017 spending levels moving forward. Matt, you mentioned to me the other day that in contrast to some continuing resolutions in the past, this one, at least as it pertains to the Defense Department, actually provides very slightly less than the FY16 appropriation. Is that right?
Yes. The continuing resolution contains a full year appropriation for military construction and the VA. And that top line for that appropriation bill actually dropped by about $4 billion year over year.
Okay. So really it's going to come down to you know the traditional, the core defense appropriations that the defense subcommittees traditionally look after. In terms of what they'll do moving forward. The Bipartisan Budget Act sequester caps remain in place, obviously, although as adjusted for 2017, the president's budget largely adhered to that cap, although many Republicans in the Congress would like to revisit that cap. There's been a lot of talk back and forth over the last several months about potentially using at least a portion of the funding that had been in the OCO request, the Overseas Contingency Operations request, to, in effect, increase the base top-line budget above the cap agreed to last December for fiscal year 2017. That'll have to go into the mix in terms of, you know, what the Congress does or doesn't agree to after Election Day and before the CR is up.
So I think one thing that's also worth noting is that even within sort of the two chambers of Congress, there is disagreement on how to approach that. So in the House of Representatives, they were able to include the extra money, but in the Senate, it was less clear if there was going to be support for that based on votes around the Defense Authorization Act and sort of the Appropriations Committee's general approach to the top line of the bill. Plus, the other thing to note is Congress is only in session for about 2 weeks in November, so 31 days probably is overstating the amount of actual productive time that Congress will have to try to figure out an extension.
Gotcha. So, you know, moving forward, all of this in many ways really hinges on the election, you know, both at the presidential level and then what happens in the Congress. You know, with respect to the Congress, it's sort of... It's sort of hard to imagine the House really turning over. You know, I think that there's been some speculation about that, but it's a pretty long row to hoe for the Democrats to really think about retaking the House. Is that a fair assessment, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the most likely outcome that people seem to be looking at for the House is that you get a slightly smaller Republican majority, assuming, you know, that it's a good night for the Democrats. The only sort of issues potentially that would cause would be for future budgets. Where you'd see Paul Ryan facing sort of the same scenario that John Boehner faced, which is that the folks on the margins that are likely to lose are not the folks in the Freedom Caucus that are giving them all the headaches. So while the control is less likely to change, it may become a smaller margin of error for votes on some of these must-pass bills.
Right. So the sort of the conservative agitation for maximum cutting of discretionary spending is not going anywhere. And then on the Senate side, you know, that's a toss-up. You know, I won't pretend that I've, you know, counted votes very carefully, but my sense is that could go either way at this point in terms of switch to a very narrow margin of Democratic control or sustaining a very narrow Republican majority.
Yeah, there are sort of a number of swing states. It looks pretty clear that Democrats are likely to pick up a handful of seats, particularly Wisconsin and Illinois. You consistently see Democratic challengers outpolling Republicans. But there are a whole bunch of seats that are really up in the air. If you look at New Hampshire, if you look at North Carolina, if you look at Pennsylvania, Nevada, there's a lot of seats out there where it really could go either way. In Nevada, for instance, is Harry Reid's retiring seat. So that's actually would be one additional Republican if they were to win.
Mm-hmm.
So I think most of the sort of the polling aggregators have it around, you know, 52% Democratic chance, 55% Democratic chance of majority. But even if they get there, it will be maybe 50-50 with the White House and maybe 51-49. Very, very small majority.
Right, right. And then in the presidential race, you know, again, I don't think we know anything that others don't. You know, obviously, it's been sort of a rough week for Donald Trump since the debate. Things are probably looking, you know, more secure for Hillary Clinton. But there was a time where we thought that following the convention and then things largely through the month of September largely swung in Donald Trump's favor. I think that with respect to defense spending and the defense budget, we know more than we did a couple of months ago with respect to the contrast between a Clinton administration and a Trump administration. Donald Trump gave a speech on defense policy a few weeks ago wherein he cited some specifics about his preferences for defense spending and about the use of that spending. He advocated piggybacking on a Heritage Foundation report and a report of the National Defense Panel, essentially hewing to a defense top line that mirrors what was in the fiscal year 2012 president's budget. That was a budget put forward by then Defense Secretary Robert Gates, and it called for a defense spend, a base defense top line that varies between about 17% and 19% higher than the Obama FYDP, Future Years Defense Plan. That would be a pretty substantial increase to the defense budget starting in 2017. You know, it would pay for a substantial increase in all manner of forces to hear Trump tell it. You know, an increase in Army force structure, in Marine Corps force structure, an increase in the size of the Navy to something like 346 ships from a current goal of about 308. The increase in the size of the Air Force was a little bit puzzling. He talked about an increase to about 1,200 fighter aircraft, but by my count, there are already more than 1,200 fighter aircraft in the Air Force. Be that as it may, there's clearly a desire to plow substantial money into all manner of forces. You know, for my money, you know, once you get the Navy's shipbuilding program on a path to something like 346 ships, including the new Columbia-class ballistic missile submarine, not clear how much of that 17 to 19% increase will really be left to move a lot of other muscles in the Defense Department. I think you'll see a lot of claimants for a notable amount of money, but probably not enough to do everything that a President Trump would want to do. Obviously, if President Trump wins, the strong likelihood is that there is continued Democratic control, not just in the House, but probably the Senate also.
Republican
control. And so in a Trump administration, he can largely do anything he wants with respect to getting GOP support on the Hill. That means that you know, in terms of revising the Budget Control Act spending caps on the Defense Department, the path would be clear to doing that. You know, for a long time now, We've labored under strict spending caps for both defense and non-defense discretionary spending. Under a Trump administration, I think you could easily see the caps on the defense side go away entirely and really only enforced, indeed possibly even reduced, on the non-defense side.
I think so. The other thing I think in terms of thinking through the Trump budget is thinking about sort of the other policy commitments he's made. So if you look at as sort of the build a wall and then sort of the rhetoric around border and homeland security, you're looking at a pretty significant investment in those budgets as well, which would be in the non-defense side. So I think you'd have to. It'd be interesting to watch sort of how the defense commitments, the DHS commitments, proposed tax cuts that he's made, commitments to infrastructure investment that he's made. How all that gets brought to the Hill in the budget format would be very interesting, because trying to figure out all of those numbers won't work if he wants to try to get to a balanced budget. So there's going to be something that has to give, and it would be interesting to see what actually gets is a priority and what sort of gets submitted versus what's being talked about now.
Yeah, there are pieces of the Trump agenda that it's not hard to see a GOP Congress, a fairly traditional conservative GOP Congress, going along with. But some of what you outlined, the infrastructure piece, for example, very hard to see them really swallowing that whole. You know, his commitment to wanting to preserve entitlement programs, particularly Medicare and Social Security, as is now, that'll probably run up against some opposition from Speaker Ryan and others who I think want to try and control the growth of entitlement spending over time. So a lot would have to come out in the wash in a Trump administration relative to what he's communicated thus far. Defense is probably the clearest path forward in terms of where there's real Republican consensus. You know, in terms of a Hillary Clinton administration, which, you know, at this sitting seems a little bit more likely, I think the conventional wisdom is that there's pretty good continuity between the Obama administration and a Clinton administration. Certainly a lot of the people that are advising Hillary Clinton on defense and national security have strong ties to the Obama administration, probably served in the Obama administration in senior roles. And so I think bring a mindset that is consistent with the budget proposals that we've come to know from the Obama administration. Again, the Budget Control Act caps for fiscal year 2018 and beyond will be a complicating factor in a way that they probably wouldn't be under a Trump administration. The Obama administration has put forward future years defense plans that violated the Budget Control Act caps in the out years in hopes of getting the Congress to revise them. It's very likely, I imagine, that Hillary Clinton would probably follow a similar path, at least as a means of trying to open negotiations with the Congress on revisions to those caps. And that would have to be resolved in some manner, at least for fiscal year 2018, and you know we would see that play out, you know, essentially through March, I guess, of calendar year 2017. You know, the Hillary administration, the Hillary Clinton administration, would put forward a budget, a president's budget, sometime in March, maybe as late as April, I suppose, given the changeover. And in that period, somewhere between Election Day and the end of March, there'd have to be a negotiation about spending caps for 2018, understanding that it could drag out beyond that and we could go into further brinksmanship, given that the fiscal year obviously doesn't start until October 1, 2017. There'd be plenty of time for the same kind of back and forth and sclerosis between the White House and the Congress on discretionary spending levels. So we may not get a lot of clarity on 2018, despite there being, I assume, a president's budget sometime in March of next year.
So I actually have kind of a question. I've only sort of been following this through sort of a couple of terms now and not really much of a way of a transition. If the fiscal fight over 17 carries over into calendar year 2017, which is not improbable and certainly something you can picture, Could that further push back the FY18 release, or will the Clinton administration just sort of kind of come in with its plans kind of already directionally baked, regardless of the, you know, if we're still operating a CR in March, for instance?
Yeah, no, I think you're probably right. You know, the Pentagon, and you know, in my knowledge here is mainly around the DoD side, really wants to know what the numbers are for 17 before they really let the ink dry on an FY18 future years defense plan. You know, that how much you would ask for in 18 and beyond can be materially affected by how much money you think you're going to get in 2017. And if you really don't know that for certain until February or March, because there's no agreement on 2017 appropriations, you very well could see the budget slip. You know, we've gotten used to the Obama administration being at least a little late in submitting its budgets. You know, rarely has it met the first Monday in February deadline. But I think we're probably looking at a timeline certainly no earlier than early March. Early March is in many ways the absolute best outcome we could think of in terms of timing here. Could easily slip into April. The only thing under a Clinton administration that would argue, I think, in favor of a relatively quick budget is the continuity from the Obama administration. The only single issue that I am aware of on the budgetary side where Secretary Clinton seems to have communicated a policy that's at odds with the Obama administration is the news that leaked a few days ago regarding her comments about the Next Generation Nuclear Cruise Missile program that a lot of people know is called the Long Range Standoff Weapon, LRSO. She didn't name it by that name, but it was clear she was referring to that program in a conversation with former Defense Secretary Bill Perry, and was skeptical about a program like that. You know, as visible as that program is, it's largely around the margins. And I think the likelihood, again, is that you'll see, you know, relative continuity from the Obama administration.
So one other sort of interesting thing is that, by and large, Secretary Clinton has, I think, for a lot of policy areas, laid out very detailed plans, but defense is one of those, the areas where it's not, she actually has released fewer details than Donald Trump, which is interesting. But I think with the continuity that you're talking about, that sort of, you can infer a lot of things from that maybe are not spelled out explicitly in position papers or her website.
Yeah, I think it's sort of generally a perception that Hillary is you know, somewhat more hawkish than Obama has been. You know, clearly was supportive of interventions where he was clearly reluctant to go. You know, you maybe can infer from that you know, a tolerance for higher defense spending than Obama's wanted. But I think we're talking about, you know, sort of fairly marginal questions of degree here more than anything else. You know, but the similar approach to trying to look after both defense and non-defense discretionary spending under the Budget Control Act, as the Obama administration has done. You know, obviously that's been a central feature of the Obama administration's negotiations with the Congress on budgetary matters, is the Obama administration's preference that any rise in spending caps have to be equal for defense and non-defense. I don't see any reason why a Clinton administration wouldn't pursue the same tack, whereas a Trump administration probably would not. You know, so a lot of unknowns here, I think. Even if you think you know what the outcome of the election is, from a budgetary standpoint, there's still a lot of shoes left to drop. And I think that as we get closer to Election Day, we'll probably do another one of these podcasts and you know, handicap a little bit closer. So if you've been listening, please tune in again, and we'll bore you at length with more prognostication about elections and budgets and related matters.
You've been listening to Avacynt on the Record. To learn more about Avacynt, go to avacynt.com or follow us on Twitter at @avacynt.